Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. As always, alongside me is Dylan White. And for a few more days, he is the reigning NFBC main event co-champion with his partner, Brian Slack. How's that feel, man? Like, are you like kind of like ready to get back into the race again? Or like, are you like, how does that title work? Like, do you lose it now? Like, is it really over, or do you carry it until the end of the season?
I had to mail back the trophy and the belt, but I'll always have that huge check. So the novelty check photo. I don't know. It's a weird feeling. I'm doing a draft, my only main event draft, tomorrow night, Wednesday night, the night before opening day, with Rob DiPietro, friend of the pod, Rob DiPietro, former draft champions, overall champion, and who's got a great Patreon, and who was one of our guests on the Fantasy Summit last year. So we're drafting tomorrow night. That's my only main event. So, you know, I figure just make a win back-to-back overalls. Do that, walk away from the game after that.
Oh yeah, you're gonna go full like Barry Sanders, like set some records and just be like, oh, I'm gonna go off to London and you know, announce my retirement. That's fun. You just play Dynasty after that. No more main events.
Yeah, exactly, because they do call me the Barry Sanders of fantasy baseball, so that's might true. As well live that's, up to that.
That's always been your nickname. So are you co-managing with Rob, or is he just
we haven't really discussed all the details of how it's going to work, but I mean, he's a great player, obviously. Yeah. I respect his game, he respects my game, and then we'll figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. That's going to be fun. The new partner for this year. You didn't want to ride solo, huh?
No.
You need somebody to check you?
Basically, it's so much work. It's so much work on your own. It's just so much work as a partnership. So being on your own is even worse, because someone can pick up the slack, if you will, if you are busy or out of town, or you're like caught in some sort of family drama, then you can always have your co-manager pick up the slack.
But it's fair. That was a good plan. I have my good friend Dan Fu, who is co-managing my huge investment of $150 that I had left over in my NFBC account from finishing second or third in a DC. Maybe we can take double main events. Let's see. We'll see.
That'll be nice.
I'm competing against you in the DC, but so who knows? And we did lose Brian Wu right off the bat. The funniest thing is, and this is an aside that no one cares about, but Dan was texting me, and he literally texted me, did we lose any players to injury since the draft? And as I was about to text no, I had a DM pop up from you, and it was like instantaneous. It was like Dan sent it, and then 2 minutes later, after leaving the roster, I got your DM ping about Brian Wu going on the IL. And I like texted Dan back, and I was like, no more asking this question, because you obviously have powers that you're unaware of that forced Brian Wu onto the IL after asking that question. So yeah, some sort of witchcraft there. So shouts out to Dan, though. Stay away from questioning our team any longer, because we might end up with more injuries that we can't sustain. Anyway, Dylan, but we have a fun concept this week. We're not talking news and notes. I kind of figure with the last week, some stuff has shaked out. Some guys aren't playing. We kind of know what's going on. We'll talk more of that in season. We got plenty of weeks to talk about what goes on in season. But this week, I think we're going to look forward a little bit. We're going to have some fun. I always like to do stuff like this. And the concept is a breakout draft, the 2024 breakout draft. So we are taking players, and this is what the definition is by us that we came up with because we make the rules in this show. It has to be outside of the top 100 ADP for redraft this season. This is a redraft specific piece of content here. And we're looking at guys that are getting drafted outside of the top 100. I looked over the last 2 weeks or week and a half in NFBC leagues. There's a lot of leagues drafting right now. I think that's a pretty good data set and gives us a pretty good idea of where guys are being valued. So we're looking at players that we think will be inside the top 100 ADP next season. I think the players that we're picking here are probably all players that we feel pretty damn good about getting inside that top 100. So I was given the first pick here, and I'm gonna share it with you. Jordan Walker is who I'm gonna go with. He's just outside the top 100. I'm gonna kind of progressively work my way down here with the picks. He's about 120 right now in ADP, give or take a couple of picks. I just believe in the opportunity. The hit tool was there last year. I think the underlying numbers are fine. I think the approach is only going to continue to improve. There's huge power here that's been untapped, and he's been able to balance that with really good contact skills. I think it's coming. Maybe it's not this year, but I'm going to bet on it being this year. I think the price is really good. And I feel like in comparison to last offseason, the buzz is down quite a bit, and he didn't have a bad rookie year. So I'm kind of banking on Jordan Walker slugging his way into the top 100 picks next year, maybe even higher.
Very good pick. Very good pick. So I went with you said Jordan Walker. So I'm like, okay, yeah. I got to take some young guys that can take a big step up. So I went Junior Caminero. Maybe it's cheating because maybe if he was going to be a full-time player with the Rays, he would be already inside the top 100, maybe. But luckily he was sent down, and so he's been falling. He's like pick 300, 350. But yeah, I mean, we love Junior Caminero. Great hit tool, great power. I think he, if he played a full season, could be 270 with 25 home runs. If he does that, if he comes up halfway through the season and kind of does that pace next year, people are going to see, you know, like a Manny Machado type of production as a floor. And then he'd be picked, you know, fourth round, fifth round as a minimum. So I think Junior Caminero is my pick there. I think Ellie De La Cruz is going to lose. Like, I was thinking ahead. I actually spent a lot of time on this, that, like, what would the third base landscape look like next year? Ellie De La Cruz probably won't have third base. Gunnar Henderson probably won't have third base. So, you know, losing two options there. And so Caminero would creep into the top, like, five to seven, I would say, easily. So that's my pick, Junior Caminero, to combat your Jordan Walker.
No, I like that pick a lot. And I saw Caminero out here last week in the AAA game, and he hit a triple in his second at bat. He walked first at bat. Second at bat, hit a triple at 114 to the wall. You can see it on my Twitter. He flies around, you can see a little bit of the speed there. He can move. Really impressive, you know, physicality, especially for a guy who just turned 20. He was the second youngest guy in that field besides Roman Anthony, and was easily the most impressive player that I saw, maybe hitting wise this entire time. I just like the power, you know, like what he's able to do in terms of bat to ball skills and solid approach. I think the approach is only going to get better. I think we're going to see a guy that has, you know, double digit walk rates pretty consistently. So yeah, all in on Caminero. I have been for a long time. This is one of my all time sort of DSL finds, digging into the underlying StatCast data. So I like it. I like that Junior Caminero pick a lot. Just to clarify as well, we did make these picks off air ahead of time. That way we could give you the best possible show and be prepared. But we did naturally draft this via text, actually, back and forth, because we're on the move. All right, for my second pick, I'm going to take the first Jackson in this draft. There could be multiple. I'm taking Jackson Holliday. I know he didn't make the Orioles. We'll see how long he's down for. It could be a month. It could be a few weeks. I don't think there's going to be much that's going to keep this guy from coming back up. All the places that I drafted him, I'm still holding on to him as a, in my bench spots. I'm not really all that concerned that we're going to see 2-3 months where he's in the minors. I think it's going to be quick. We'll see what they're, what type of games they're playing here. If they're trying to maybe move some guys or on the 40-man roster to get another pitcher, kind of condense, so to speak. And then that would make potentially open up an opportunity for Jackson Holliday. And we struck out a little bit during spring training. The numbers were still pretty good. You know, he's still an impressive player. I'm not concerned at all about swing and miss with this guy. He's always had great zone contact, great zone awareness. And the bat to ball there is just natural. He's gotten bigger and stronger this year. That was one thing that I noticed just seeing him in person is how much weight he's added in about 10 months. He's just physical and ready to go. So, you know, unfortunately he's not breaking camp with the team, but I don't think he's going to be down for long.
Yeah. Great pick. I was thinking about him there. Even if he comes in, plays half a season, it doesn't matter if he's hitting 280 with like, say 12 home runs, 15 stolen bases, everyone's going to just start giving him the helium for going into redraft next year. Cause he's going to be hitting at the top of the Oriole lineup. Gunnar Henderson will have matured even further and developed and grown, and Adley Rutschman, and you know, Kobe Mayo may have been up, but just everyone's going to be talking Orioles batting lineup, and with Holliday at the top, he's going to be a very, very, very big target of everybody for redraft next
year. Yeah, I think he's a guy that, you know, I had this in one of my bold predictions, which might be tough now, we'll see, but you know, I had him pegged for a guy that could produce 100 runs as a rookie. I just think he's one of those guys. He's dynamic in terms of getting on base. He's very fast on the bases. He steals lots of bases. And he's got some big bats behind him, which most rookies of this caliber typically don't have that sort of cushy landing spot. I think it's this guy that could be the top of the Orioles lineup for a really long time. And I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, so, no question. I mean, if he hits 100 runs, obviously he's going to be in the top 100 next year. And it's, yeah. I'm saying even if he just like does like a Vaughn Grissom kind of cup of coffee, everyone's going to still take him because they know he's going to play full season next year. So very, very good. Very good pick. So I'm going to take another Jackson. Jackson Rutledge, but Jackson Churio of the Brewers. I think he's having a very quiet redraft season this year for a guy who's probably going to play full time, at least 500 plate appearances, go very close to 2020. As a very young hitter with a reasonable batting average. And I just think he's going to have like the Jazz Chisholm treatment. If he does like 2020 and hits 240, this is like a low percentile outcome. He's still going to be picked in the top five rounds next year, I think, because he's going to be a year older, still in his early 20s, a source of power and speed. And that's if he has a terrible a 2024 that's below expectation. If he does what we kind of think he's going to do, it's just going to, the sky's the limit. So 2020 outfielders are a premium in redraft, and especially if they're young because of the tantalizing upside. So Jackson Churio is my second pick to go with Junior Caminero.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And it's funny because I had heard some thoughts out there in the Twitter sphere regarding, you know, sort of which Jackson should be the number one prospect. And it seems like a lot of people are leaning Jackson Merrill. I like Jackson Merrill a lot. I think he's a good prospect. I just don't think the same upside is there when it comes to Churio. Holliday, who we talked about. But Churio, I mean, you're talking about, of those three guys, the guy with the biggest impact in terms of just raw power, bat speed, you know, great bat angles. There's no question about Churio hitting for power in games like there is with, you know, the other two guys. Approach is fine. He's so young. He's a guy that with every level, he might struggle for a little bit and then seems to adjust. So yeah, I think he's going to be a big windfall for a lot of people. I didn't get him as many places as I hoped to this draft season. It sort of felt like every time he was in my queue, he'd go to somebody else, and then I would end up going to the Jackson Holliday or Junior Caminero. Well, so at least those two guys went ahead of him in the draft. That makes me feel a little bit better. All right, let's bring it on to round three here, Dylan. for round three, we do have to take at least one pitcher. That was one qualifier that we put on this draft, is can't just be all hitters. We got to take some pitchers. Going six, by the way, on each side. I'm going to go with a guy that I've liked for quite a few years. I thought had huge progression in 2022 when he pitched his way into the major leagues and sort of the midway point of the season, was in the Red Sox rotation all of last year. Of course, I'm talking about Brian Bello. We've read all the stuff about him working with Pedro, et cetera, in the offseason. That's all well and good. I think it's just further development of that slider, further development of just his command of the zone, and just knowing where to attack and how to attack certain batters, all the things that come in terms of game preparation at the major league level. And I think we sometimes underrate that. Some of that stuff is done at the minor league level, but more often than not, it's not as robust in terms of the information you're getting, who you're working with, and how you're executing it. So I do think, you know, sort of this year, full season already gone by, walking into it this year, he's got a big fastball. He has the ability and has always had the ability to drive a lot of ground ball outs. And that changeup has always been nasty. So he adds in that slider and can get a few more swings and misses, some chases outside of the zone on that pitch. You know, I think we could be talking about a guy next year who's, you know, low to mid threes in terms of ERA, somewhere probably around, I don't know, I'd say maybe like a 24 ish sort of K rate, and, you know, a decent walk rate, which, by the way, wasn't too bad last year, 6.7% walk rate in, you know, his first full major league season. Of course, isn't bad, but I'm looking forward to the progression here with Bello. He's still extremely young, you know, will be 25 in May. So sort of walking into the prime years of his career, this is one of those pitchers I'm kind of banking on that could be a top 20 pitcher off the board next year.
Yeah, I mean, I like Brian Bello a lot. I have him in a couple places in Dynasty, so really hoping you're right on that one. Yeah, I just, the park is tough, but I think he'll be okay in Fenway through his career, and you know, the Red Sox are banking on it too. I went with a pitcher as well. I went this time I went Nick Lodolo. So, I mean, he's being taken now in like the 12th. And a lot of that is because people are worried about his injury risk, his leg. He's had some, you know, injury history. So even with like 120 innings, he's still being taken in the 12th. That's because people like his upside. So if he has a full season, a full healthy season, and does kind of what we hope on a per inning basis, I think next year he's going to be right up there as a top 20 pitcher, top 15 pitcher. It was only 2022 where he had like a 3.66 ERA, 1.24 WHIP. He was 24, I think, and he was just kind of the darling of the scene. Last year was a bit of a lost year. I think if he comes back okay in 2024 and looks healthy going into 2025, especially with that Reds team with a huge offensive lineup behind him, I think he'll be a very popular pick in 2025. So I went Nick Lodolo.
I like that pick. He obviously isn't breaking camp with the team. He's remaining in Arizona. I know that came out today. But, you know, certainly I think the fact that he is pitching and, you know, getting closer to it, that, you know, if you get this guy back in like May and he's healthy, as you said, and he pitches well, we saw what he could do in short samples. So I think it's just a matter of the injury risk. And, you know, I think where he's going, you're able to sort of take the risk on that. And then, you know, if you miss 2-3 starts, it's not something you're even going to be considering if he's pitching well. And you look back and, you know, July 31st, right? Like one of those sort of things that your team's trade deadline, you're like, yeah, I'm kind of happy I have Lodolo here. So agree there. We are halfway through this draft. That means we're going to take a break, Dylan, and we come back, we'll handle the second half of the draft. What do you say?
I say let's do it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them, all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, and we are back. Dylan, we're now in round four. For those of you that just skipped over the first half of the show, the first six picks in this draft were Jordan Walker, one, followed by Junior Caminero, followed by Jackson Holliday, of course, followed by Jackson Churio. Got to double up in your Jacksons there. Followed by Brian Bello, followed by Nick Lodolos, a little pitcher double shot there in the third. We're jumping back in the fourth. And I'm going to go with one of my off-season sleepers, actually, I believe. Somebody I felt was a little bit undervalued in drafts heading into draft season. And somebody who I think the managerial change in Houston is going to have a big impact on him seeing full-time at-bats. And that's Chaz McCormick. I'm a big fan. Was solid throughout spring training. He's going to be an everyday guy in that outfield where him and Tucker are sort of the staples at this point. Can't play a little center field if needed. And Dusty sort of platooned him last year, and I don't even really understand why so much. Because he hit really well against left-handed pitching and, is obviously still really solid against righties. He murders left-handed pitching. But I think there's enough here, 28 years old, kind of coming to his prime, and the numbers were, very, very solid last year. He hit 273, 353, 49 in 115 games. So if we're looking 140, 150 games, I think the counting stats are going to be good. It's still a good, productive offensive lineup. He drove in 70 last year, missing however many games. So I think this could be a guy that you're looking 75 runs, 85 RBIs or so, maybe more, 20 home runs, maybe 25. And he could, he was a steal away from a 2020 season last year. I sort of don't feel like a 2020 season is impossible. I feel like he's one of the more undervalued outfielders right now on the board. And I did my home league, which is a 12-team head-to-head points league. He dropped really late. I think he was one of my last picks, one of my last three or four picks in that draft. And I didn't have a second or third round pick. So my picks went a little bit later than everybody else's. There were only a few guys still left picking when McCormick went. Even in a 12-team league, I totally want to roster Chaz McCormick as one of my outfielders, one of my utility option. Totally fine with that. So we'll see how it plays out. I think the skills are there. I think he showed really well last year in more of a full-time role and has had progression each of his two seasons. So we'll see if he continues to progress next year or this year. Excuse me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think him and Lane Thomas kind of out of the blue had those 2020-ish seasons. And I think people are kind of tentative on taking the plunge on them because, they've only kind of done it once. So I think of those two, I think Chaz McCormick has a better shot of doing it. All those things you're talking about, like how Dusty wasn't really playing him, even though he was playing great defense. It was just kind of a weird situation. So if he comes close to 2020 again or surpasses it for sure next year, he's going to be a safe bet for 2020 and on the Astros, and there'll be no more questions. There's no downside kind of thing. Right now he has huge error bars of what his ceiling is and what his floor could be. And if he, kind of meets his potential, as you say, then definitely he'll be a pick in the, you know, the first five rounds next year. So my fourth pick, I went with one of my favorites in this draft season, and that's Zach Neto, shortstop for the Angels. Always liked him. Had him last year. I've told the story before. I watched a game. He came in trying to score, and he crashed into the catcher and kind of bent his neck, and it looked really bad, but he stayed in the game. But then ever since that day, his performance kind of lagged, and then he finally went on the IL, and I think they called it a shoulder at the time. So I attribute his tailing off at the end of the last season to that injury, which I saw with my own eyes. And I just think that he's going to exceed his projections. Right now, they kind of have him as like a 2015 guy. They kind of have him penciled in batting ninth. I think by the end of the season, he'll be batting leadoff. In spring training, he's stealing bases at far more of a rate than he did in the past. And I think he's going to maybe get 25 stolen bases. I know Ron Washington's talking about wanting the Angels to run. So I think he gets to the top of the lineup. He steals 25 bases, maybe more. Maybe goes 20-30 as a shortstop for the Angels. And I just think that next year, if that happens, obviously he's going to be a top 100 pick. So I've been taking him in like the 16th round, 15th round, 17th round as kind of my second shortstop. He's playing middle for my draft champions teams. And I'm very happy with having Zach Neto on my team.
Absolutely. And he was one of my favorites in the 2021 Cape Cod League before he had actually had an ankle injury there. So there is some injury history, but he's an incredible athlete. I think that the lack of minor league experience really makes it tough to even project him, because you're kind of just working off of his initial crazy numbers when he was, and then sort of his initial ascent to the major leagues. And, you know, the fact that this guy was playing college baseball a year ago and then was a starting shortstop in the major leagues, I think says a lot just about him, you know, as a player. So yeah, I'm totally in on that pick 100%. And I think that, you know, Neto is a guy that could really exceed expectations as well this year. He was the one pick where you made it and I was like, oh, damn it. I wish I had made that pick. What was I thinking? How did I let that one slip away, Jeff? What are you doing? You're losing it in your old age. So great pick by you. Just want to say that. That one stood out to me. I'm going to jump in on my next pick, which there was some discourse around this guy today on Twitter. Some interesting discourse, I think, from a lot of different smart people. I didn't comment on it, but did read all throughout it. Guy that I'm going to bring up here is Victor Scott. Scott is now making the team after there were some injuries, but I think we also need to take into consideration that it's a 2022 draftee, one full season of minor league experience. After a full season, they sent him to the fall league. They had him playing big league games last year to cover for some of the departures because of the WBC. So the Cardinals have shown a significant amount of confidence in Victor Scott, which is very unusual for them without young outfielders. They're kind of famous for like trading away their young outfielders or calling them up and then sending them down or having them sit on the bench. So it's not as if young outfielders are just constantly breaking in to the Cardinals outfield. So, you know, this guy's a 70 defender in the outfield. He's one of the better center field defenders you're going to see. I think we're seeing it with Zidane Raffaella right now with the Red Sox, is something that I called, you know, at the first pitch. They asked for sleeper prospects, and the guy that I kind of hammered on was Zidane Raffaella. And everyone kind of looked at me cross-eyed and were like, what about Jaron Duran? And I boldly said that I thought Jaron Duran's best season was going to be 2023. So in the same vein, guys who have elite defense get plate appearances. That part of the game matters. When you watch baseball, you see great center fielders, great shortstops, great catchers. You see the difference they make in terms of run prevention. That is half of the game. You have to score runs. You have to prevent runs. And that's what Scott's going to provide. Now, as an offensive player, I like his game a lot. I know that he was comped to Eury Ruiz. They're different types of guys. Scott does not have an identity crisis in terms of who he is. He puts the ball in play. He hits line drives hard. he does not try to elevate. If you look at what Esteury Ruiz's launch angles were in 2022 in the minor leagues when he was going off, really, really high launch angles. I mean, he's a guy that knows how to elevate it and was backspinning balls at low, you know, EVs and was able to sneak them out in really good environments. And I don't even think that Park Factors has totally gotten a grip on the impact of that sometimes, you know, in some of these parks and guys that, you know, just know how to backspin it enough and are able to take advantage of that. Scott, on the other hand, is a guy, makes consistent contact, never misses in the zone. I mean, it's like a 12% zone miss last year. And that includes his double A numbers, which was right in line with what the A ball numbers were. We know what kind of threat he is in the bases. I don't think we've seen a guy like this in terms of base stealing prowess, probably since Billy Hamilton. This is a much better baseball player than Billy Hamilton. And I think that's the separator. When you put Hamilton, Ruiz, some of these guys who are sort of steal first, Scott has the sort of tangible baseball skills in terms of making the right reads in the outfield, making the right throws, just in terms of the pitches that he takes, his approach. And that was the big point that I wanted to get to. Dylan, do you know where Victor Scott ranks in terms of swing to chase rate? So that is your swing rate minus your chase rate, which gives us a pretty good idea of how real your chase rate is. Like, do you actually swing and differentiate pitches or not? Where would you say that he ranks among batters who had 300 or more plate appearances in the minor leagues last year?
Just because you're asking the question, it's clearly near the top. So I will say 16th.
You have one number correct. It's actually sixth, and he's tied for fifth. He had a 26.4% swing to chase rate. He had a 24.8 chase rate, which is above average, with a 51.2% swing rate, 21% miss rate overall, 12.8% whiff, in-zone whiff rate, 90th percentile exit velocity, about 100 miles an hour. There's not like a huge amount of impact, but he doesn't try to lift the ball consistently. Get something on the inside, he will turn on it. He's just a very smart hitter. And he's a guy that, you know, as a left-handed hitter with 80 speed, he's a guy that can put down a bunt and he does it consistently. And just, it's hell. When this guy, when the ball is put in play, it's hell, you know? And it's very similar to a prospect that is in top 100s as well that I watched this week. Justin Crawford is the same kind of guy. He puts the ball in play, he gets on base, and it's really tough with these rules, not only in terms of, you know, being able to check the runner, but also, you know, in terms of blocking the base now. You know, that's another rule that's being brought in terms of like where throws can be caught and the tag can be made. Like if a guy's blocking the base because the throw is at second base, guys are going to get extra steals. So it's going to be even harder to catch Victor Scott. You're going to have to be one of the best throwing catchers, or it's going to have to be like a high fastball at 96 and like you just get a great jump. You know, you're halfway up in the squad already when you're making that throw or something, and you get like a 1.9 pop time. I mean, you really need to be on top of your game to keep this guy from stealing. So we'll see how much run he gets. I think the defense, I think the fact that he makes contact and does get on base for a guy like this, has that sort of advanced approach, and is such an elite base stealer. I think that Cardinals fans, after a couple of weeks, are going to want to see this guy day after day and not want to see Dylan Carlson, which at this point kind of looks like a bit of a failed experiment, unfortunately, as much as I liked Dylan Carlson years ago. So he's the best defender in the organization. He's one of the fastest runners in baseball. I believe in the player. I mean, I saw this guy in the Cape. I saw him in spring training for 2 years. And we saw what he did in the minor leagues last year. And it's just a guy that's, I think, just ready to take the role and does all the little things well. And, you know, defense is a big separator. Billy Hamilton wasn't a good defender. Esteury Ruiz wasn't a good defender. This guy isn't just a good defender, he's a great defender. And I think that makes all the difference in the world. So that's why I'm going with Victor Scott here. And I think if he gets enough run, man, this is a guy that could steal 80, 90 bases. And if he steals 80 or 90 bases, don't, even if he steals 60 bases, right, which we both think very reasonable. I would, you know, a full season projection is probably going to put him about there, even maybe 50. But he steals that many bases, he's definitely going inside the top 100. No questions asked.
Yeah, I mean, Esther Ruiz steals 50, 60 bases or whatever, and he's being taken in the eighth round, and there's questions, is he even going to play? Is he going to swing his way out of off the team because he chases? And that's Esther Ruiz. Esther Ruiz is kind of like the floor for Victor Scott. Like, Victor Scott is going to play. Esther Ruiz also plays terrible defense. So it's like, so Victor Scott has Esther Ruiz as his floor, and that guy's being picked in the eighth or ninth. So by logic, Victor Scott should be, you know, maybe a top five round player if he plays full time. And there's not going to be any pressure on him too to like have to hit leadoff, because that Cardinal batting lineup, you know, the Goldie, Arenado, and Newt Barnes, Wilson Contreras, and Tommy Edman, like, it's just like they don't need him. Like, he can be at the batting ninth, no pressure, get on base, and then just, you know, set the table for those other guys. So I really like Victor Scott. I really do hope he gets run. I'm curious to see, like, if he does very well, you know, maybe that kind of maybe lays out the red carpet for like Bradfield for the Orioles, or like to show that this type of like great defense with good steals in center field is, you know, a viable major league player. And that it would just be very interesting to see, like, is there kind of like a new archetype that's kind of returning from like the Gary Pettis days of the 80s or whatever it is, with great defense and speed. But
Vince Coleman.
There you go. Exactly. Willie McGee. So I do like that pick. Very, very interesting storyline. I'm curious how he's going to go in Fab this weekend. I'm sure there are going to be lots of $100, $200 investments. And I know there's going to be a lot of discourse about how that's a crazy investment because, you know, as soon as Newt Barnes Edmonds back, he's going to be sent back down. Who knows? We will see. But definitely he could win you the league with those stolen bases. So I can see how someone would want to take that chance. So my fifth pick, I went instead of speed and bunts, I went with power, with Christian Encarnacion Strand of the Reds. We love the power. Now that sort of there's some clarity in the Reds infield now, with Matt McClain possibly having to have shoulder surgery, we don't know yet. Noelvi Marte suspended for half the season. Kind of clears the way for Encarnacion Strand to get near full-time at bats, at least in the first half of the season. He's should have more than 30 home runs in that park, could get up to 40. I would love to see that. Obviously, if that happens, he's going to be a very, very trendy pick next year. He's already being kind of taken in the ninth, kind of in the same area as like Josh Naylor, Spencer Torkelson. So I think a lot of people are kind of gambling on what I'm talking about. So I like Encarnacion Strand. I have him as a kind of a sleeper to lead the NL in home runs. I really hope that happens. That'll be a great story. But yeah, that's my fifth pick, Christian Encarnacion Strand.
I like that one a lot. You know, I think it's probably more 5x5 dependent than OBP, you know, just the nature of his game, but he's going to hit a lot of home runs, and especially in that park, I think he's set up for great opportunity to drive in runs. Still young enough that I think he's going to be a run producer as well. So yeah, I like that pick a lot. And it seems like all the questions that we had about the Reds have sort of switched to like, all right, now, you know, who's going to end up playing in some of these roles, all these injuries and suspensions and, you know, sort of awful things that have happened throughout this offseason, but do like the CES pick quite a bit. Funny how that all worked out. My final pick here, I'm going to go with a local native Boston boy, my guy, Cousin Sal Frelick. He's probably going to be playing the outfield now with the Garrett Mitchell injury. So I don't know if that hurts or helps. I don't think it really matters. I guess adding that extra eligibility would have been nice. But, you know, I think that Frelick is one of these guys that's going to be some of his parts. He's going to hit for a high average. He's going to get on base. He's going to steal some bases as well, produce runs. He's going to be hitting leadoff most days in that lineup, particularly against right-handers, which I think is, you know, a huge benefit to him. Not bad players behind him either. Contreras, Yelich, you know, Hoskins, Adames, Churio. I'm not going to list Gary Sanchez in that. kind of amazing he's a DH. But anyway, yeah, so I like Frolik. You know, I think I'm maybe going a little bit more out on a limb here just because the power is not going to be crazy or anything. But, you know, if he gets a little lucky, I could see 12 or 13 home runs. You know, he does sort of have that bat speed. But he's a guy that's going to put the ball in play, I think, hit for a high average. And his second year in the big leagues, I think, is going to be a big one. So really interested to see what Frolik can produce. But, you know, I don't think a full season where, you know, he hits 275 or, you know, 280 and steals 30 bases is not out of the question for me.
Definitely agree. I think I wrote about him in our sleepers article for the outfield. I think I picked him and I kind of comped him to Stephen Kwan, but maybe with more speed. And Stephen Kwan was like the 15th rated outfielder 2 years ago. And So if you can get like that type of good batting average and steals, and then if he also gets some infield position eligibility, like third base or second base this year, like when Mitchell comes back, like that is going to be a very attractive player next year. And I do see him getting into the top 100. In fact, I think I would call Sal Frolik as maybe like my trendy pick for next year of who I think I'll have on all my teams.
I
could see it. I just high average, good power. Lots of stolen bases, good defense, so he's going to play full time. I just think that it's going to be he'll be on my teams because I like high average on my teams. So my last pick, I was torn. I was going to think Taj Bradley, maybe Shane Boz, but I thought that's kind of lame. So I went out on a limb here and I went with my half countryman Shota Imanaga of the Chicago Cubs by way of Japan. I have him on a couple teams too. I think he's being undervalued. He's being taken in like the 10th or 11th now. What I think he can do is like what Justin Steele, was doing. And so I think that's like a sixth round pick, get into the fifth round. So, you know, I wanted to pick someone who's like, maybe not someone you'd think of as being a top 100, but I do think he is going to do better than people think. I think he's going to be he's going to make a lot of friends in Chicago. There's a pitching ninja backfoot slider that happened today on Tuesday. I don't know who it was. I can't remember who it was that he undressed, but you're going to see a lot of that. I mean, we saw the numbers in WBC, the StatCast metrics. We saw some of it in spring training too. Although he's a bit older, he's not as trendy as like Yamamoto, who you see in Dynasty, which I think just kind of naturally kind of pushes him up in redraft as well. He's not on the Dodgers, not part of the Ohtani storyline. So, you know, he's kind of being forgotten, kind of in the shadows. And I really think he's going to be, you know, a 1.2 whip, ERA in the threes, 150 innings at least of good strikeouts. And I think that type of workload from a pitcher speaks volumes for next year. So Shota Imanaga is my final pick over Shane Boz and Taj Bradley. Sorry, guys. I had to go with the Japanese pitcher.
I like it. I mean, you like stayed on brand and that's perfect. But I also want to call to attention, it was only 9.2 innings in spring training. And at spring training, he had a 19 strikeout to 2 walk ratio. That is crazy. You know, I mean, that's more than 9-1 strikeout to walk. That's absurd. Once again, spring training, but I think it shows like this guy missed bats. I mean, he was a consistent, you know, 10K per inning, 10K per nine guy in Japan, was a really good pitcher over there. And I think, you know, it's a good bet too. I think we saw it last year with Senga. I felt like he was a little bit underrated because they're not like the super high-end Japanese superstar, not the Ohtani, the Yamamoto, the Roki Sasaki when he comes over. But these guys have consistently come over the last 25 years, 30 years, and been really good major league pitchers dating back to Hideo Nomo and since. And there's been a lot of guys since that you've probably forgotten about, that have produced great seasons coming over here. I mean, even Kikuchi at this point has kind of developed into a pretty solid major league starter. So Imanaga is a guy that I would be buying in on. I think the Cubs are kind of a sneaky team that they should probably make it out of that division. I think they have as good a shot of anybody. especially with some of the injuries the Reds have dealt with and some of the questions maybe about their pitching. I think the Cubs are in the driver's seat, and Imanaga could be in for a big season. The other thing I will say, great spring training. You know, maybe the first few starts are up and down with these with a guy like this, and same thing with Yamamoto. They're adjusting the mound height. They're adjusting to the seams and to the ball and just their environment and everything else. And I think people kind of did that, panicked a little bit early at times with Senga. And then from like May 1st on, he was just cruising. I think it was, you know, sub three ERA and just was one of the better pitchers in the National League. So, and got some side votes. So it kind of goes to show you, buy into a guy like this. I think that's a great pick, Dylan, and probably a good place to wrap this draft up. I hope you enjoyed it. Opening day is just a day away. So, you know, get ready, get your socks on, get your lineup set. And if you have any questions about your lineups, hit us up with them, you know, ping us on Twitter. We answer questions from time to time.
How great is it? Baseball starting tomorrow and for real.
I know, man. I'm so excited. I can't wait to watch real games. I mean, I guess that we did get that in Korea, but it really didn't feel like that, did it? When there's spring training games going on and I'm in like the first week of my backfield work and there's a major league game and it's like, I got to set my lineup for three guys. Okay. For two games. And you know, the way that they had the pitching set up too, was like kind of goofing with people. Cause like they had starters going three innings and then Michael, you know, everybody was in the bullpen and available cause they weren't going to pitch for over a week. It's like Michael King came out and threw a few innings and et cetera. They had Cease in the pen. So it's not a typical series. I kind of hope that MLB doesn't do that again. Or if they do, play games in Europe where I think there's could be potential growth of the game. Like Korea and Japan, man, they got good professional leagues and, you know, a pipeline and countries that are both, you know, very invested culturally in the game of baseball. So I think, like, if you're going to do this, go someplace where, like, you can grow the game. You know, bring it over to Europe. We're starting to see some European prospects. I saw an Italian pitching prospect this week. You know, I saw one from Africa too. But that's for another show. That's for another show, Dylan. All right. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. I want to thank you, as always, for tuning in and subscribing to all of our content at baseballamerica.com. That's how we keep the lights on and keep on doing this and providing more information to you, and how I'm blessed to be able to come down here to Florida and watch backfield games and get you some video and some news and notes and reports. So thanks again, and we'll be back next week. Cheers.